So, first I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to this conference and especially for giving me the opportunity to give a talk here. So I will talk about Finley, which was already announced 1 year ago. And what I will more specifically focus on in this talk will be how to get some weak coupling results from this Finley. So in the first part of the talk, I will just introduce basically the Beto-Ansatz and Y system, but okay, most of you already know things, so I will go quite quickly. Then I will review where the Finley comes from, how it is obtained and how it is used, what it looks like. Once this will be explained, I will try to give an idea how to expand the Y system at weak coupling, and in particular, I will give a six-loop result for the dimension of the Konishi operator at the very end of the talk. So first, about the Beto-Ansatz. So you all saw on the poster of the conference this equation, which you all recognized. It is just the Beto-Ansatz equation. And there is a very general fact that for a lot of theories which are called integrable theory, this Ansatz allows to diagonalize an Hamiltonian. So here it allows to find the eigenstates and the eigenvalue of the dilatation operator, provided we solve this equation, which analytically it's not something you can solve easily, but yet it's much simpler than diagonalizing the Hamiltonian. So in the present case of ADS-CFT, this Beto-Ansatz only works for long operators. So therefore we call it asymptotic Beto-Ansatz. And in this talk, I will focus on the dimension of short operators, and hence it will be necessary to find something beyond this asymptotic Beto-Ansatz. So this something beyond asymptotic Beto-Ansatz is just the thermodynamic Beto-Ansatz. Once again, it is on the poster of the conference. And the basic idea is that any arbitrary excited state is associated to an infinite set of functions called Y functions, which solve a set of equations. So this set of equations can be called either Y system, which was conjectured by these authors, or it can be called thermodynamic Beto-Ansatz, which is another form of the same equation. And if you find the Y functions which solve these equations, then you can deduce the energy of a state, or in the field theoretical language, the dimension of an operator. So if you want to look a little more at what are these two equations, so for the TBA equation, on the poster there is, well, for ADS-CFT it's slightly more complicated than that in the sense that you have an infinite sum. So instead of just an equation like that, you have an infinite sum of Y functions. These Y functions are labeled by two indices A and S, which live on this lattice. So each circle on the lattice stands for one Y function. And the star symbol here denotes a convolution. And additionally, there can be some source term which can be understood by some contour deformation. On the other hand, the Y system is just a functional equation where you do not have anything like a convolution. And, well, the notation here, the plus and minus here, denote the shift in the spectral parameter because YAS is a function of U and plus minus denote a shift in this direction. So basically these two formulations are equivalent up to some analyticity conditions, which are not really trivial to obtain. In particular, most of the kernels here contain some branch cuts, and the Y functions themselves will contain usually infinitely many branch cuts. And these branch cuts come typically from a change of variable between U and a variable X defined through a square root. Okay. So these two sets of equations are equivalent, TBA and Y system, up to analyticity. And this Y system can actually be rewritten into a simpler set of equations, which is the Hirota equation. And there is a simple change of variable between Hirota and the Y system. In the Hirota equation, instead of Y functions, you have T functions, which are still labeled by two indices A and S, which live on this lattice. And they are function of the spectral parameter. And the Y system and Hirota equation are equivalent up to a gauge freedom. So now, Hirota equation is interesting because it will have some kind of more physical interpretation. And in particular, it is related to representation theory. So at least in some limits, the t-functions can be interpreted as some characters. And as a consequence, the lattice where the t-functions live can be related to the symmetry group of your theory. So basically, this whole setup with TBA, Y-system, and Hirota equation, it exists for lots of models. And depending on the symmetry group, you just get a different lattice. So for SUN, you would get a lattice which is infinite in one direction and which has n rows. For instance, the SUN cross SUN principle model, it is infinite in two directions. And, well, you can also have some spin chains where it is, for supergroups, you will have something infinite in the upper direction and the right direction. And then for ADS CFT, you have this lattice. Another interesting thing with the Hirota equation is that, well, in this talk about Finley, we use the fact that the Hirota equation is solved by Wronskian determinant, which give a parametrization of the whole Y system in terms of a finite number of functions. So this is based on the Wronskian solution for the Hirota equation. And at the end of the day, it gives a finite set of nonlinear integral equation. So just to comment a little bit on the lattice written here, there are some fancy symbols for each node, some black node and some cross and things like that. And this actually hides some information about analytic structure, which we will talk about later. So now I will talk a little bit about what this finite set of nonlinear integral equation is and where it comes from. So I claimed that the Hirota equation is solved in terms of Q functions through Wronskian determinant. So I will explain that. And we will see that some additional analyticity properties can be understood, and out of that, a finite set of nonlinear integral equation can be written. So first, a short introduction about what Q functions are. So I guess there will be a talk devoted to the subject tomorrow, so I will not go too deeply into the details, but the basic idea is that when you have the Hirota equation on a given lattice, here I wrote it for the SU4 lattice, then there exists a linear system which allows to reduce it to a smaller and smaller lattice through something called Becklund transformation. And at each step, when you decrease the size of your lattice, you can define some new object called Q functions, which will be the boundary values of the T functions, the T functions on the boundary of your lattice. So actually there are lots of, decreasing the size of the lattice is related to how you embed SU1 into SU2, into SU3, and so on. And there are lots of different ways to do these embeddings. And this gives rise to a lot of Q functions. So, very formally, when you decrease the size of your lattice, you drop somehow one eigenvalue of a twist or, 1 degree of freedom that you can choose arbitrarily, which means that initially you have a Q function with 4 indices for SU4, and every time your Q function loses one index, and there are lots of different ways to lose indices one after another. And these different ways translate into some so-called nesting paths inside a diagram called the Hasse diagram. So different ways to do this transformation would give rise to different Q functions, and in the total you have 2 to the n Q functions. And so each path like that is a path on your Hasse diagram.
What is n large?
N large is the, here it's 4. It's the size of your original lattice and of the rank, 1 plus rank of the symmetry group. Okay, so when you do this construction, then you come out with a lot of Q functions, but they are actually not independent of one another. And there are some relations between all these Q functions. So basically, when you look at your Hasse diagram, Well, it's not easy to see there, but it is just an hypercube. And for each facet of the Hassel diagram, you can write a relation between the four Q functions at the corners of the facet. So for the facet in green here, you get a relation between Q34 and Q3, which are there, and Q23, Q34. So what you have is that the product of this Q function by this one gives some Wronskian determinant of the Q functions living there. So the notation, I just recall the notation that F plus means F of U plus I over 2. So inside the determinant, the plus and minus is just a shift in the spectral parameter. So when you have that kind of equation, they are very easily solved by some Wronskian determinant. And you get a solution like this. And one can easily understand how this kind of Wronskian determinant is related to the QQ relation by using the so-called Jacobi-Trudy identity. So it is just an identity which holds for an arbitrary determinant. It says that the determinant of a full matrix times the determinant where you remove the first line and the last line and the first and last column, you get a combination of minors of your determinant. So if you write this determinant and you use the Jacobi-Trudy identity, then you get that the full determinant is Q234 times Q3, and then you have this block would correspond to the block here, which gives 234 plus, and so on. And you can, just writing the Jacobi-Trudy identity, you recover the QQ relations. So basically, it is a very general fact in this subject that you get some simple bilinear equation that by means of some general relation on determinant and minors of determinant, you obtain the general solution of your equations as simple Wronskian determinant. So this explained where one way to think of Q functions by a purely algebraic manipulation of determinants. But then the question is, initially I am interested in the T functions here. I'm able to go to the right decreasing the complexity. Then how do I come back to the left? And then what comes out is that there are some simple determinant expression of the original T functions in terms of Q functions. So for instance, for the T functions on this line here, you can write it as a sum like that. Q1 times Q1 bar, when 1 bar means you take the complementary set, all the other indices than 1, like 4 bar is 2, sorry, there's a typo on my slide, 4 bar is Q1, 2, 3. And so if you write that kind of sum, which can be also written as a Wronskian determinant, then you get the expression of an arbitrary T function on this line. And this expression generalizes to all the T functions in this lattice. And for instance, you can write it for the second line here. And this time you will have Q functions with 2 indices and with n minus 2 indices. So what comes out here is that mathematically by algebraic constructions, you get the general solution of the Hirota equation in terms of a set of Q functions which are not independent of one another and are just written through Wronskian determinants in terms of basically N functions. So now, in the case of ADS-CFT, you can use that to parameterize the solution of your Y system. And, well, due to the shape of your hook, you basically split the hook into 3 parts, one part to the right, one part upwards, and one leftwards. And in each part of your T-hook, you write some kind of Wronskian expressions for your T-functions. So the right part is just what was on the previous slide. Then for the upper part, we have Q-functions, which we denote by the letter small q to avoid confusions. And you write a compact expression in terms of wedge product for all the T-functions on the your lattice. Okay, so this, a priori, all this is not at all specific to ADS-CFT. For any Y system that you could have, you could just do the same, and some Wronskian expressions are known for really a lot of different lattices. So in the case of ADS-CFT, using this parameterization, one can write a finite set of nonlinear integral equations, which will allow to find a finite set of functions parameterizing the whole wave system. And this is what we did in the Finley paper. But in that paper, we did not only do this to recast everything in terms of a finite set of functions, but we also understood some extra analyticity properties which gave a better understanding of the Y system. So I will briefly motivate where these analyticity properties come from. And basically the motivation for these properties is the so-called classical limit. So it is a limit where the T functions completely exhibit their interpretation in terms of representation theory and in terms of characters of a given matrix. So basically in the classical limit, the T function can be written as the character of a matrix which has the interpretation of the monodromy matrix of a superstring. A priori, from the Y system, you could only say that omega can be an arbitrary member of U2,2/4. But in fact, from the string theoretical interpretation, we know that this element is a member of PSU, 2,2/4. So this gives you more constraint on your T functions. And for instance, you get that the determinant is equal to 1 and that there is some Z4 grading and some invariance under Z4 transformation. So one can notice that these symmetries generalize to some symmetries of the T functions. And at the level of T functions, we find a so-called Z4 symmetry and another symmetry from the superdeterminant equals 1. So the Z4 symmetry is the statement that T1s and T1 minus s are related by just a sign. So in this expression is actually more complicated than it looks, because there is a hat here which denotes some kind of analytic continuation. When I wrote the solution of Hirota equation in terms of Q functions, you have a different analytic expressions for the T functions on the red part here and to the left on the green part. So that means that 1s and 1 minus s are not in the same part of the T-hook, and this object is some analytic continuation from one wing of your T-hook to the other wing, and it has to be done in a very specific Riemann sheet. So this symmetry is not something as trivial as it looks on the slides. And so we also have a periodicity condition, which says that you have one function which could a priori be complicated, T00, and it turns out to be just something periodic. So this symmetry can be recast into some information about the analytic structure of the functions that we are interested in. So for instance, the Z4 symmetry here can be rewritten into the fact that there are some Q functions, typically Q1 and Q2, which only have one single cut on the whole complex plane. So knowing that kind of analyticity property is very important, because as soon as you know a domain where your functions are analytic, you can close some integration contour and get some, easily get some non-trivial relations. So basically this Z4 symmetry gives you some analytic property on some Q function. And in the same way, the periodicity condition here tells you that although you have a function which is complicated, which has infinitely many branch cuts, well, in spite of being complicated, it is just periodic, which means that you just have to know it between two cuts, and for that, you just have basically to know the jump on one of these cuts. So this symmetry here on this slide, they are motivated from saying that in the classical limit, there is some symmetry, and then let us assume that the same symmetry holds at finite size. So of course you may say, why should we assume that? I do not believe you, and so on. So basically, in our paper, we proved that the equations derived from these analyticity assumptions are just equivalent to the usual thermodynamic beta ansatz. So you could either say, okay, I believe you, this symmetry must be true from some first principle, and then you can derive the thermodynamic beta ansatz. Or the other way around, if you do not believe me about that, you just believe the thermodynamic beta ansatz, if you want to, and then you can derive, we derived these analyticity properties and the finely which comes from them. Okay, so now I will briefly give the structure of this finely. So basically we parameterize the Y system in terms of a finite number of functions. So in that paper, we only talked about states in the SU2 sector, where there is a symmetry between the right and the left part of the Y system. And then everything is parameterized in terms of three functions. We believe that for more general states, there would be five functions instead of three, but this is not done yet. So out of these three functions, two of them are just densities with a finite support, and the support is minus 2g to g. And the fourth function, the third function, the last one, is a gauge function, which just reduces to a real function on the real axis. So this parameterization basically defines three Q functions. But as we saw on the slide about the Vronskian solution of the Y system, you actually need to know much more than three Q functions. So in order to know the other Q functions, you need to use the QQ relations to recover all the Q functions, and then you can write T functions out of that. Then once you have this parameterization of T functions, you can find a closed system of equation based on the analyticity condition written on the previous slide by basically closing some contour using the fact that you know that there is no cut or singularity. So this set of equations takes this fundamental structure. So basically you have, on the one hand, you have some densities rho and rho 2, and you can easily express some Y functions out of these densities. And then it is, you have an equation to rewrite the function rho and rho 2 in terms of the Y functions. So that means you have a closed system of equation for rho and rho 2 if you exclude the Y functions. Then you have another thing to iterate over, which is you have to introduce the function u into the game, which is some gauge function. And once again, there is an equation to express u in terms of all these guys. And, when you do this loop, you need some input about u. So you have an iterative structure for the solution of the Y system, which can be summarized into these two loops. And in addition to the iterative set of equations, you have to put an additional equation to find the so-called beta roots, which are the zeros of the T functions. So you have to put an exact beta equation. So in this Finley paper, we wrote the beta equation, just the same beta equation as in the usual thermodynamic beta ansatz. And we explained that this equation is strongly related to the analytic properties of our Q functions in the Finley approach, but we were not able to give a completely rigorous derivation of the exact beta equation which we just took from thermodynamic beta ansatz. To give you an idea what the equation in these loops look like. So you have, on the one hand, you have to use the QQ relations to parameterize everybody. And then you have some integral equations where basically the star here denotes some convolution, and you have a few fancy kernels which may contain some square root. But, okay, I will not give lots of details, but we have some quite compact equations to give this Fini. Okay, so now we will see what happens at weak coupling. So I advertised at the beginning of the talk that we would be interested in six loop Konishi. And so what we can do is take this Finley and expand it in powers of G, the coupling constant, and see what comes out. And it turns out that you can find some very analytic expression for every single function which enters the game, and then you can get some expression for the energy out of that. So if you go back to the iterative structure of our Finley equation, when you expand in powers of G, as the gauge function U contains the dressing phase and some exponential suppression, and basically this function is responsible for wrapping. So depending on what order in wrapping you are, you do not have to iterate this loop a lot of time. So basically for six loop, you are at the first wrapping, so you just have to go through this loop one time, which means you just have to take the asymptotic value for U. And the only thing that you have to iterate over is this loop. So basically this has to be iterated for every order in G square, whereas the wrapping part has to be iterated only for every four orders. So then, well, we just have to iterate this at weak coupling. So I will just give a very simple example of what comes out when you do that and how you get analytic expressions for the functions which enter the game. So the first step when you use our Finley is to use QQ relations to express Q functions in terms of one another. So for instance, I only kept a very small part of the whole ASSO diagram to give a simple example. So in our Finley system, there are some functions which are directly the parametrization of everything, and so they are considered as known, they are our parametrization. So basically it is the case for Q1, Q12, and Q123. But if you want to write T functions, you need to also know, for instance, the function Q13. And for that, you have to use this equation, which is the QQ relation relating these four functions. So when you write this QQ relation, you expand the Wronskian determinant. What comes out is a difference equation on the ratio Q13 over Q12. You get that Q13 over Q12 shifted by plus I over 2 minus the same thing shifted by minus I over 2 is some known expression. And when you solve this difference equation, what comes out is an infinite sum where you have to shift this right-hand side by some quantity. So to remind the notation, the bracket here denotes a shift of the spectral parameter. So this infinite sum is what comes out when you invert the QQ relation, and a priori it would not be so nice. But when you expand at leading order, you can try to look at what the sum will look like. So here I just give the leading order, and not the next orders, but it can be done to more orders. So to the leading order, U is equal to minus 2g4 over U square. The function Q12 here is just equal to the Baxter polynomial, which is the polynomial whose roots are U1 and minus U1, which are the beta roots. And then, if you write this infinite sum, you get a sum of U over Q plus Q minus with some shift. And so, the thing that you sum has several poles. It has first a pole coming from the 1 over U square in capital U, and then it also has some poles due to the Q plus and Q minus in the denominator. So when you do this infinite sum, you get an infinite ladder of poles, but fortunately, the beta equation makes most of the pole disappears. I mean, not most, no. The sum of them disappear. Namely, the pole which comes from 1 over Q plus Q minus. Basically, in one term of the sum, the 1 over Q plus give rise to a pole, and 1 over Q minus in the next term of the sum give a pole at the same position, and they cancel with one another due to the beta equations. So what comes out when you expand things at weak coupling is that you see very well that the beta equation, which tells you the position of beta roots, it is a condition that your function do not have too many poles, and you have a rigorous derivation for that, order by order. Next, once you have noticed that, you can find a really explicit expression for your Q function. You can compute this infinite sum. And what comes out is some kind of polygamma, basically. A psi function, which is the simplest polygamma. Here, it's a diverging sum, but you can deal with it. So, the same could be shown for all the other functions that enter the Finley. And the message is basically that at weak coupling, you can really expand every function and get a completely analytic expression in terms of basically polygamma functions, or generalization of that, for every single function that enters the game. So out of that, you can try and find your energy at weak coupling. So in principle, you have T functions which have infinitely many branch points. And this branch point, the position of this branch point is related to the parameter G, because they come from a square root. And in the square root, you see that the branch point has position related to 2G. So basically, the real part of the branch point is plus minus 2G. When you are at weak coupling, G is very small, and the two branch points collide into a pole. So instead of having functions with lots of cuts and several Riemann sheets and, complicated structure, you just have functions with poles, and they turn out to be analytically expressed in terms of multiple zeta functions, which are, a slight generalization of polygamma functions. So this way you get an analytic expression for every single function in your Finley. And then whenever you want to compute some integral, because you, at the end of the day, you have integral equation, you just have to close some contour at infinity. And when you close a contour at infinity, you sum over the residues, and some zeta function naturally appears this way. So when you go through all this process of analytically expressing the solution of Finley, of Y system, in powers of G, you get an expression for the energy. So the energy, or the dimension of Konishi operator, can be written first from the asymptotic Beto-Ansatz. The asymptotic Beto-Ansatz give this expression, but we know that this expression is not exact starting from the first swapping, which means at for loop. So starting from G8, the terms G8, G10, and G12, and there are all the other terms, are not exact. So from Finley, you can find the correction to this energy. So the correction, E minus EABA, is given by the sum of these terms. So when we do this, first we recover the known coefficients for G8 and G10, which were obtained in previous papers and were checked against conformal field theory. Then you get a new number for the six-loop Konishi, which involves zeta 3, zeta 5, and zeta 7 and zeta 9. So one problem with respect to this equation, one open question with respect to this equation, is that there is another group, Beinock and Yannick, which obtained another result by a method which we think should give the same result. So there is a discrepancy in the coefficients of zeta 3, zeta 3 to the square, and zeta 3, zeta 5. Up to now, we do not know where the discrepancy comes from, and we hope that some conformal field theory computation will come out soon in order to understand where the mistake is. He may start. Okay, nice. That's good news. So I expect that this will be very soon understood, hoping that the conformal field theory result will match at least one of the results. Okay, so I will just conclude there. So in this talk I briefly explained what this Finley is. So it is basically a rewriting of the Y system, and it is analytically it is proven to be equivalent to the TBA, but it is just a rewriting in the form of a finite set of equations with some new symmetries which give a better understanding of the structure. As I said, it can be used to explicitly solve the Y system orders par orders in perturbation theory in powers of G. So the six loop result, we have a good news that it will soon be confirmed or infirmed by quantum field theory. Then seven loop would be easy to compute. It is just exactly the conceptual complexity of the computation is exactly the same as for six loop. Only the technical details are a bit harder. And in principle, double wrapping would not be complicated either using this Finley. I mean, Finley could also be expanded analytically in powers of G to get double wrapping. In addition, this expansion in powers of G of our Finley gave a better understanding of some analytical properties. Typically, the exact beta equation was not completely understood in the first Finley paper. And when you look at the, at least in the weak coupling, you get a much better understanding of it. And of course, there are still quite a lot of open questions about all this TBA. And so the fundamental object in the Finley is the T functions. And these T functions have some much simpler analytic properties than the original Y functions. So we hope that some physical interpretation of these objects can be found, probably both in the strong and weak coupling, and in particular that the analyticity properties could be derived somehow. So there is an open question both for weak coupling of what Finley will mean, and for strong coupling the same question can be asked. And you can also ask how Finley can be expanded at strong coupling. Okay, so there is also another question which I forgot to mention in this slide. It is that currently our Finley is written only for a specific set of operators, namely some symmetric operators in the SL2 sector, and a priori it would not be complicated to write it for arbitrary operators, but it is not done yet. So thank you for your attention, and if you have questions...
Wouldn't it be simpler to prove the generalized Schlüter formula following the procedure we developed with Valody and Pedra for the principal chiral model, and then Schlüter formula is much more trivial to deal with?
Well, what you did, you mean for O4 principal chiral model?
Exactly.
Basically, I mean, in my point of view, it is just the same approach as this, in the sense that what you wrote in terms of one gauge function, this gauge function can be viewed as a Q function. And I mean, the fact is that you
What I mean, so after writing kind of Finley for principal chiral model, we also derived from it first wrapping correction. No, the most complicated part, I understand, is the exact beta equation. Right? So we actually derive from Finley and show that it's the same as generalized Schlüter Yannick Beinack formula.
Well, I don't know exactly what you're referring to, but... Well, I'm not sure the... Okay, when should try and sit down?
Can you make some structural predictions about, how perturbation theory will continue? For example, there's these general, ideas that at some point, in any field theory you should get, multi-theta functions, and that also at some point you should get numbers which are not even theta functions related to these elliptic polylogarithms. Would it be maybe possible? I mean, in the end we cannot measure Konishi, but I think a very interesting statement would be if you can make a statement about the generic form of the expansion.
A priori, multiple zeta functions can a priori occur, and we could even have expected to have already at six loop, we would have expected to have zeta 2,6, but somehow it cancels. But at least in the way that we do the computation, at some intermediate step, we have this zeta 2,6, but then it cancels out. We expect that at higher orders, we do not see why it would keep canceling, so it may appear. On the other hand, when we look at the structure of Finley, we really think that even at higher loop, you still can write everybody in terms of multiple zeta functions. And then when you integrate your multiple zeta functions, what comes out at the end of the day is zeta, potentially with multiple indices, but we would just expect zeta in these expressions.